Okay, thank you. My name is Lara. I'm a system security engineer from Stuttgart, working at Bosch. This is my third DNOC, the second time non-remote. Last year at DNOC, I noticed that the field I'm working in, automotive networking, is relatively unusual for DNOC, but the people seemed interested in it, so I submitted this talk, and yeah, now I'm here. In my free time, I volunteer at Selfnet, where I help connecting the dormitories in Stuttgart to the internet, and I'm currently studying for my master's degree in computer science. So let's start with use cases for automotive networking. Why do we even need this? Of course, there are many different use cases in a car. Different functions have different requirements, and so there are different technologies in vehicles. First of all, there's control data and safety relevance data. That's, for example, for driver assistance systems or powertrain, for example, for powertrain ECUs, or in general, just safety relevant data for, for example, for the brake system. Here we need a really high robustness, about medium bandwidth, and it should be low cost. Another use case would be low-speed data, for example, for electric window openers or electric seat control. Robustness is not that important here. We don't have high bandwidth requirements, but it should be very, very low cost to keep the prices cheap. Another use case would be infotainment. Here we have audio or video streaming or navigation systems. This requires a lot of bandwidth, about medium robustness, and as always, low cost. So for these different use cases, we have made different bus technologies or bus systems in the vehicle environment. For example, at the low cost, low bandwidth end, we have LIN, then we have different CAN versions, we have automotive Ethernet from 10-based T1S up to 10G-based T1S, which obviously offers a lot of bandwidth. And yeah, all of them have their advantages and downsides. So for this talk, I want to focus on the low-level protocols, mainly three of these bus systems, LIN, Ethernet, and CAN. There are, of course, a lot of other protocols that build on top of these, but they could be a topic for another time. Okay, so let's start with having a look at the local interconnect network, or LIN for short. It's a hierarchical bus system, so you have one commander node and up to 15 responder nodes. And it's relatively cheap. It only needs one wire for transmission. And its operating voltage is at about 12 volts. So the driver here looks relatively simple. You have the LIN line, the one wire where this is transmitted, disconnected over a pull-up resistor to the battery voltage. And the serial communication interface can read from read the voltage level from the LIN line. And to transmit data, it has a transistor which it can use to pull the line to ground. How are the signals in LIN encoded? The logical 1 is the high level, and logical 0 is the low level on the bus. High in this system is recessive, and low is dominant. So if multiple nodes would be sending at the same time, the dominant signal, the 0, is what would be transmitted. The thresholds, when something is considered high and when something is considered low, depends on whether you're the sender or the receiver. As a sender, everything above 80% of the battery voltage is considered high, and everything up below 20% is considered low. As a receiver, everything about above 60% is considered high, and everything below 40% is considered low. It's a good example of Posselt's law: be conservative in what you send and be liberal in what you accept. It makes the system more robust. The header. The frames in LIN are split in two parts, the header and the response. The, The header starts with a sync break field, which is at least 13 bits dominant, so 0. Then there's a delimiter field with one bit set to 1. There's a sync byte, which alternating ones and zeros. This all helps with synchronizing the clocks between the different nodes. And then we have a protected identifier, which consists out of 6 bits for the identifier, that specify which node shall answer, and 2 parity bits. Afterwards, the response is up to 8 bytes of data and a checksum, which is the inverted 8-bit sum with carry. Every byte on LIN gets 2 additional bits added to it, a start bit and a stop bit. The start bit is always 0, and the stop bit is always 1. OK, so as I just said, the frames are split into 2 parts. The header is always sent by the commander node, and the response is then sent by a responder node that was identified with the PID. So for example, the commander nodes can send a node with the ID of node 2. The node 2 would be responding. And then the commander node can send the next header so another node can respond. This makes sure that only one node speaks at one time. But it has a problem that without the commander node, nothing works. The commander node becomes a single point of failure here. OK, then. Let's have a look at a more robust protocol, CAN, or the controller area network. This bus system uses 2 lines, CAN high and CAN low. And these 2 lines are connected over termination resistors, which are usually about 120 ohms. The exact value depends on the version of CAN. With CAN, you can, depending on the version, transmit between about 1 Mbit per second and up to 20 Mbit per second. In CAN, the signals are transmitted by comparing the voltages of CAN high and CAN low to each other. If there's a high difference between these 2 lines, then this is interpreted as a logical 0, this dominant signal. And if there's a low difference between these signals, then this is considered as the 1, which in CAN is the recessive signal. OK. Frames can start with the arbitration phase, where the node sends its identifier. Then there are some control frames, some control bits, for example, RTR value, remote transmission request, where a node can request another node to send something. Then the DLC, the data length content field, which specifies how long the frame will be. Then we have up to 64 bits of data. CRC with 16 bits, the acknowledge fields, which the nodes that's sending always sends recessive, but the other nodes can override it in order to confirm that this node was received successfully, and then 7 bits to mark the end of the frame. The exact length of the of a CAN frame depends a bit on its content, because if you have 5 bits of the same polarity, you always add another bit with swap polarity. So for example, if you send 5 zeros, then you have to send another 1. The 1 is not interpreted for data, but you need this as a signal on the CAN bus. So if this is not a hierarchical bus system, how is decided who gets to talk? For this, each node at the start of at the start of a frame, they send their identifier, and the identifier is treated as somewhat as a priority. So let's look at an example. In this example, node 1, node 2, and node 3 all want to send at the same time. So they start with the start frame bit, that's always 0. Then they send a 1, everything's the same here. So on the bus, there's the 1. Then they all send a 0 for the identifier. And then we have the first case here, where one node sends something different. So node 1 and node 3 send a 0, and node 2 sends a 1. And 1 is the recessive signal in the CAN. So on the bus, there's a 0. Node 2 notices that it's sent 1, but it's read 0 from the bus. So it knows somebody else is sending at the same time. Now nodes 2 stops sending, and we'll try again later. Now we still have two nodes trying to send, so this continues up until later. Now we once again have a case where node 3 sends a 1 and node 1 sends a 0. 0 is the dominant signal, so the 0 is on the bus. Node 3 sees this and stops sending. Now node 1 can continue sending without even noticing that somebody else wanted to send. And the other nodes waits until it's their turn, until another, until they have the highest priority. So in the end, the ID is somewhat like a priority, and the lower the ID, the higher the priority. CAN is a relatively robust protocol, so let's have a look at how it handles errors. Let's say for this example, node 1 is sending something, and nodes 2 and node 3 are just listening right now, so they start with the recessive signal on the bus, so they don't interrupt anything. So node 1 here in this example sends a 1, 1 is on the bus, it's fine. It sends another 1, and now it reads a 0 from the bus. That means something here went wrong. It's not the arbitration phase, so there can't be anyone else sending something. So it notices this bit error. And now it signals an error. Errors in CAN are signaled by sending 6 bits of the same polarity, so either 6 ones or either 6 zeros. For error frames, you don't add stuffing bits, so it's really then 6 bits of the same polarity. So node 1 now sends these 6 zeros. And now nodes 2 and node 3 notice that something went wrong because they can see that there's a stuffing bit missing. So now they themselves send the error frame once again, 6 bits of the same polarity. In this case, they both send 6 zeros. And afterwards, every node in the network noticed that something went wrong. The frame where the error occurred is interrupted, and the bus is in a state where the sending can start again. Each node counts their errors, and depending on how many errors they observed, they switch to different states. A node usually starts in error active. In this state, they send their error frames as dominant bits, so they send 6 zeros when they see an error. That means they can interrupt other frames. If they encounter too many errors, they change to error passive. In error passive, they still can send error frames, but they send them as recessive. So they can interrupt their own frames if they notice that there was an error, but they can't interrupt other frames anymore. If they then still continue to observe many errors, at some point they will change to the bus off state. In this state, they completely remove themselves from the bus to not interrupt the communication any further. So if there's a defect on the node, at some point it will remove itself from the bus to not cause more damage. At the same time, the counter gets decreased for every successful transmission. So for example, if a node is in error passive and then the error stop, then it can return to error active. OK, so now let's have a look at a third protocol. Automotive Ethernet. Automotive Ethernet uses a single unshielded twisted pair, and depending on the version, it offers different bandwidths. The version I want to now look at is 100 base T1, so the 100 Mbit version. Automotive Ethernet is, or in this case, 100 base T1 is full duplex, so both nodes can send at the same time with the full bandwidth. And to do this, they need an echo canceller in their files. So they send and receive from the same line, but they filter the signal they send themselves from the signal that's on the line to figure out what's the other signal that was sent from the other side. Then they can receive it and forward it to the software that will work with the signal. 100 base T1 uses PEM3 encoding. That means there are three different states that can be signaled on the bus, 1, 0, and -1. And always two signals on the bus are then interpreted as three bits of data. So for example, 1, 1 would be interpreted as the data bits 1, 1, 1, 1, -1 would be interpreted as 1, 0, 1, and so on. OK. The frame format probably looks familiar to you. It's usually Ethernet. You start with the preamble and the then you have the destination address and the source address. You have the length type, then the data, and the frame check sequence. The exact length depends on what you're using. For example, if you're using VLANs or something, it gets a bit longer. But that's just the usual Ethernet frame. OK. Now that we had a look at different bus protocols, let's have a look at how this is used. Let's have a look at the different network architectures that are used in vehicles. First of all, the distributed architecture, which is the traditional one, then the domain architecture, where the industry is currently at, and the zone architecture, where it's currently moving towards. In the distributed architecture, that is where automotive networking began. We have only a few ECUs. They are mostly self-contained, so there are not many. There's not a lot of communication going on. And it was possible to just connect whatever needed to talk to each other. Sometimes there was already a gateway, so something like a switch or a router. But it was relatively simple and relatively low traffic. When the networks grew more complex and you had more ECUs that needed more communication between them, at some point you needed to structure the network better. So the domain architecture came up. In the domain architecture, you grouped ECUs by their function, and you add some additional ECUs, domain ECUs, where you can centralize some functions. This has the advantage that you have a logical structure of the network, ECUs with the same domain, for example, powertrain ECUs or infotainment ECUs are grouped together. But it has the disadvantage that these ECUs are distributed all over the vehicle, and so you need a lot of wires. To solve that problem, the industry is now moving towards a zone architecture. In a zone architecture, you no longer group the physical network by function, and instead by position in the vehicle. So for example, you have a front zone, a rear zone, a middle zone. You can still do a logical grouping, for example, by using VLANs or some other virtualization technologies. And the centralization of some functions continues. So you have zone ECUs, where you can pull together some functions. And now you usually have vehicle computers, which are much bigger than gateways. They still have the routing and switching functions, but they offer a lot of more functions, and you can collect especially functions with a lot of performance requirements there. OK. So now that we have had a look at all of this, let's sum it up by building our own example architecture. Let's build a modern architecture. So we start with a vehicle computer. And we want a zone architecture, so we add some zone ECUs. For this example, we'll use 4 zones. They are connected via Ethernet to the vehicle computer. Because this is our backbone network, we need a lot of bandwidth here. Then we need a connectivity unit. This is our uplink, for example, via LTE. This gets more and more important since cars are getting more and more connected. You have some cloud functionalities in modern vehicles, so you need internet connectivity. So we connect this to the vehicle computer and also via Ethernet because we need a lot of bandwidth here. Now let's add some other control units, for example, powertrain ECUs, brake systems, or airbags. This is connected via CAN. Because we have safety-relevant functions here, so it needs to be robust. And maybe you want to reuse some older ECUs that only can speak CAN, and it allows for more reuse if you use the older protocol that was already there, and it still works fine. Then at the end, let's add some sensors and actuators, for example, the electric window openers, or or a seat controller, something like that. It's not safety relevant. It doesn't need a lot of bandwidth. So we're using Lin here because it's cheap. And with that, we have a small example architecture. Of course, in reality, the networks in cars are much more complex. They are many more easy to use. But this is a small example that maybe gives a good overview. OK, that's thank you very much. If you have some questions, you can ask them now or reach out to me later. You have some contact data of me here on the slide. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Lara. Are there any questions for Lara about car networks? Yes, I see one hand. Please state your name and your affiliation, if you can.
Christoph Badura, self-employed. So how many sensors, ECUs, and so on are we roughly talking about?
By now, there's really, really a lot. I don't have the exact numbers, but I think it was in the 10,000s. If you really count small sensors, then it's a lot. That's really, really a lot.
Wow, impressive. One more question. Please state your name.
Yeah, Christian Frömmel from Charité in Berlin.
Yes.
Are the security functions from the CAN bus, are they connected via Ethernet? Are the security functions reliable or rely on Ethernet?
Security or safety? Yeah. Safety. Safety, OK. It depends. It's possible to tunnel the safety-relevant frames over Ethernet. As long as there's an additional header that uses end-to-end protection in a safety sense, then you can tunnel them, for example, over Ethernet.
Any more questions in the audience? No, I didn't see anyone. Is there questions from Venulus? No, there is no question. Then I have a question.
Okay.
With all the equipment in the cars, what's the next evolution of 100 megabit, will there be something more for bandwidth? Because I guess it's the traffic is growing. Where's the future?
Well, so again?
Where's the future of bandwidth in the cars?
Well, for bandwidth, you already saw on the overview slide, there's already 10 gigabit Ethernet available. They are currently working on CAN versions, which offer more bandwidth. And so that's where it's moving bandwidth-wise. There are a lot of different protocols that are built on top of that. For example, for Ethernet, there's currently standardization going on for MACsec, so we can already secure the frames there.
Okay, thank you. Well, it's a lot of evolution in the car. I remember someone, there's nothing happening in cars, but you told us something else. So with that, thank you, Lara. Thank you for your talk. Thank you for sharing this information with us.
Thank you.